Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. A few years ago, the current coalition government, in opposition, made great political capital over successive deficit budgets and growing government debt under Labor. Well, in government, with debt continuing to grow, Treasurer Scott Morrison has changed the language. Not all government debt is bad, he says. Some of it, if it increases productive capacity, is good debt. The link between the real world that families live in and the rarefied world of macroeconomics gets lost in political rhetoric, and that's not the most helpful way to understand those issues that affect us every day. Beyond that rhetoric are some very big issues facing Australia. Not only how much government debt is appropriate, but also housing affordability, intergenerational wealth, and even your view of the size and the role of government. David Gallagher is an economics professor at the Macquarie Graduate School of Management. When I spoke with Professor Gallagher about these issues, I also asked him how a Christian faith-based perspective could shape the way governments plan for communities and families to prosper.
Good evening. How are you going, Stephen?
Well, thank you. Today was Scott Morrison talking about good debt, or in the last couple of days, good debt and bad debt. Now, David, wasn't it Scott Morrison and others, Tony Abbott in particular, who were talking about nothing but bad debt under the previous Labor government?
Well, that's true. And unfortunately, the current government, even Tony Abbott, when he got into power, inherited a very, very difficult structural budget situation. And certainly the previous Labor government had racked up a lot of debt, mainly because of the GFC, which was quite a very global shakeout, really, and a lot of people lost jobs, etc. But Australia seemed to weather it quite well. But I think the point that you're getting at there with good and bad debt is that good debt is debt where you are raising finances to fund things that have income-producing capability, or are going into infrastructure that will sort of nation-building. And the government's pitching this bad debt as a dichotomy as things that are sort of funding unproductive, non-infrastructure-related spend.
Yeah, so let's go into that, because it sounds as though the Treasurer is now, you know, giving us broad hints that there's going to be some infrastructure spending in the budget, and that traditionally is a way to stimulate the economy. Certainly that's working in some of the states, in particular New South Wales, where Mike Baird, as Premier, started spending a lot of money on infrastructure, and things are really moving in that state. So as an economist, do you think there is such a thing as good government debt and bad government debt?
I certainly don't like the split between, in terms of the political lexicon of good and bad, but certainly we in Australia, right across Australia, many states are behind in their infrastructure spending. You're right, New South Wales has really been going gangbusters in terms of its economic and its infrastructure strategy. But we have had, right around the country, many states have underinvested for so long in very necessary infrastructure, hospitals, roads, schools, etc. So what we're seeing at the moment is that government have a real need to sort of catch up, because essentially things have gotten so far behind that essentially we need these sources of infrastructure for our society. The thing that I guess that the government is perhaps using this good and bad debt is to try and soften the blow, because there's going to be a very, very large government deficit again. We've run very large deficits in Australia federally for about 10 years.
Yes.
And so I think that it's there's a lot of messaging going on, but we do have some real challenges.
Well, the issue with government debt, let's kind of explain it in household terms. The issue with government debt is that if you've got a large bank card bill and you can't pay it off every month, then you're paying a lot of interest every month, which you could be using to buy vegetables or, you know, meat for your kids. Is it like that for governments?
Yeah, I think governments have a need to obviously meet infrastructure, meet health, education, those sort of things. We obviously have an ageing population. More and more people every week are retiring, the baby boomers. And given that superannuation was only set up, back in the early 80s, Many people don't have sufficient savings and sort of superannuation to support their retirement. So again, government has got some real challenges on its hands in terms of its demographic profile, the lack of savings for people to support their retirement. We've also got other challenges, as you mentioned earlier, with housing unaffordability, if you want to call it, that people are finding it very, very hard to get into the marketplace, and certainly, you know, record prices at the moment, all-time highs for particularly Sydney, Melbourne, capital cities.
Well, I want to come to interest rates and other issues in just a moment, but one more question on this good and bad debt. Government surely can't just never borrow money. That would be ridiculous, because all you'd do is to manage something, you'd be spending out of the meagre write-downs that you had, or debt asset recycling. You know, you sell one building in order to build a new hospital. Government just can't operate on that basis, surely.
That's right. And I mean, there are times to actually take on debt. I mean, obviously the main principles with taking on debt is that it's sustainable, that you have a real plan to be able to pay that debt down as quickly as possible. And obviously if you're raising debt to pay for things, you want it to be good quality things. You don't want it to be frivolous and just thrown away.
Right.
I think that you know, one of the things that I think is really important that a lot of people in our community don't realise is that when we're running these large federal government deficits, is that they have to be paid for. Government has to raise bond issues to cover the shortfall, and it has to pay interest to those bondholders per year. And basically about $20 billion a year is currently being paid by the federal government to service its current debt.
$20 billion a year.
About $20 billion. And that's $20 billion per year that is not going on necessary things like roads, schools, other forms of education, health, you know, the things that really matter to you know, what we have as a first world decent society.
Yeah. We're speaking with economics professor David Gallagher from the Macquarie Graduate School of Management. Well, let's get to that question of housing then. I know a mate of yours, Ian Harper, was on this program a few weeks back, and he was describing it as a supply and demand problem, and he made the very perfectly good point that there's no other asset that doesn't have a negative gearing income, you know, aspect to it. If I borrowed money to invest in something else, it would be tax deductible. So, you know, what should the government do about the political build-up head of steam around the negative gearing question?
Yeah, well, I read a short opinion piece late last year in the Financial Review, just sort of covering this housing issue. Professor Harper's right. There are many things like supply and demand. Part of the problems with housing affordability is that is essentially that the amount of money that people need to now save up to get a deposit, so at least somewhere between 10 and 20% you need to have to be able to outlay to buy a home.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing too that's an impost, which doesn't get a lot of attention, is that stamp duty for the states charge a stamp duty for buyers of residential property. And that can be quite significant too. And you can't, you have to use savings to actually cover that. That needs to be a deposit plus your outlay of the stamp duty to be able to actually buy a house. And so there's significant imposts in terms of people being unable to actually get into the market. You mentioned about tax there and capital gains.
Yeah.
There's a real problem as well, is that the family home is capital gains tax free. So when you sell a house, and you've made money on the house from when you originally purchased it, it's exempt from any tax on the gain that you actually enjoyed. Now, people that are unable to get into the housing market are not able to enjoy or participate in a tax-free gain in that sense. So they're out of the market, and they also don't get the upside of the market. But the other thing I'd like to mention on...
But just before you leave that, does that mean effectively the reintroduction of death duty? Is that where you're going with that argument, you economists?
Really. No, not really. I mean, I'm actually a supporter of death duties, and I can come to that later. But certainly Australia did have a death duty many decades ago, and it was scrapped. But I think that I don't think it'll be in this federal budget, but it's certainly one of those options that I think one government in the future is going to have to include.
All right, but one option is going to... Oh, sorry, because?
Yeah, simply because the baby boomers pretty much hold the largest proportion of the total wealth in the country, and it's just a simple... it seems to be a simple way of government seeking to balance its budget.
Yes, 1-300-40-2020 is our number, and Professor David Gallagher is with us. And so is Bruce from Sydney on the issue of a debt economy. Hello, Bruce.
Good evening to both of you. Thank How you. Are you, B?
We're great. How are you?
Well, I'm not exactly bounding with joy down
My producer's written me a note. She says you're sounding a bit disheartened.
Yes, I am. Because I, as the learned gentleman scholar, makes a comment, I happen to be one baby boomer who doesn't own so much as a blade of grass.
Yes.
In real estate.
Yes.
And I am dependent on a particular payment, and yes, it can be varied at the whim of the boys and girls, both at Macquarie Street and up at Capitol Hill.
Well, presumably it's a federal payment that you're dependent on, so it's more going to be a Scott Morrison thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
That's right.
You're right, you're completely exposed, and I don't know if you don't have assets. Do you have any investments at all? Are you exposed, as many retirees are, to interest rates and the equities market, stock market?
Well, let's put it this way. As I said, it took a long struggle to get on the payment that I'm on.
Yes.
That basically, when I did come into a certain amount of, as I say, many decades ago, I don't think that 2 decades is particularly many.
It's a mere blink of an eye, Bruce.
Indeed.
All right, well, I'll throw that back to our economist.
Give me the right world order of the press button. But, of course, we're all supposed to just long live the Lord and I'll pass the ammunition, et cetera.
Good on you, Bruce. Well, that's the first time we've heard that here for a while. Thank you, Bruce. Well, Professor Gallagher, it's true, though, isn't it? That $20 billion going out from the federal government in interest would actually be money that they could spend on pensioners and those who are in our society. We love to look after those people. That's the money that ought to be going to them.
Yes, that's right. The asset test, as you know, was changed recently, and the whole purpose of this is to try to, obviously the government needs to save money where it can, and it's obviously looking to perhaps self-funded retirees, but and about, you know, where there are arguments politically about whether they've received overly generous tax arrangements when it comes to accessing their superannuation in terms of retirement.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is that we want, as a decent society, we need to have a very clear and strong safety net for our society. But we certainly need to be, the governments need to be looking at ways to be able to give certainty to people in retirement, because we don't want the rules changing, because that uncertainty will then not be a good thing for public policy.
Yep.
But I think also they're, you know, particularly people who are retiring, baby boomers, they've had an incredible growth in their wealth. They've had very good, on average, good incomes and full employment almost right through the 60s, 70s, etc. But they've also, they own they've got a very high ownership rate of homes. So it may well be that this current budget may seek to turn the screws a bit more on a particular part of the demographic.
And economist David Gallagher is with us from the Macquarie Graduate School of Management. David, you've been giving some thought to some biblical principles for a prosperous society when governments set budgets. If you were Scott Morrison, what do you think you should do?
Well, I think it's sort of very similar to how you would apply our own personal financial sort of situations. Is it's always important to, or particularly as a Christian, that the principle of first fruits and giving God, 10% essentially a tithe to reflect that your thanks and gratitude to how He's blessed you. But there's also many principles about you know, storing up grains, etc., in barns for times when times are tough. And if we take that sort of principle, it's particularly important if you think of grain in a barn back in the Old Testament days, of storing up things for when you have problems down the track, like a drought, for instance, if you're a farmer. You can look back on your own life and see that there are times that financially there have been very good times, and perhaps times when it's been quite difficult, where there's perhaps been unemployment or other things financially that have occurred. I think, in terms of the Bible and principles for financial, in terms of budgeting, is that you make sure that you don't spend more than you earn, and you also seek to put away resources, savings, for a rainy day, if you will. And in terms of, we contrast that to a federal budget, we should be, as a nation, making sure that we have accumulated savings, surpluses, for instance, that are there in the savings coffers to be able to smooth out difficulties when, unemployment goes up or there's an economic crisis internationally. So that's, I think, the main thing is that debt is okay, and certainly the Bible doesn't say that debt's a bad thing, but there are principles about how debt should be used, and certainly with debt, it should be done in a sustainable fashion, and one where you're not getting too far ahead of yourself.
What about the principle of Jubilee? Would you ever see that, the biblical principle where every 50 years or so you have a resetting of the economy so that you don't get so much of a gap between the rich and the poor?
Well, the thing that's interesting here, I agree, is that there's so many demographic sort of changes, in terms of the 50 years kind of thing. There's going to be different demographics that are going through. A federal budget is almost like a company where it sort of lives longer than the life of an individual. It's something that goes on, so it's very difficult. But I just think that in the case of what we have at the moment is, and you look around, all countries pretty much in the Western world are running budget deficits. Their accumulated deficits are very large, and that has a real challenge, I think, for again on this demographic concept, because we don't want to be leaving significant amounts of debt behind for our children and grandchildren.
That's right.
And I think that's something that, in terms of my own Christian biblical philosophy, that we need to make sure that we don't impose burdens on people that shouldn't be imposed on.
Well, then the question is, does government need to step in and make that happen, or shouldn't that be a matter for the individual? And perhaps in some ways that's the essential separation between a left-wing philosophy, government should step in, big government, redistribution of wealth, and a right-wing philosophy, small government, leave it up to the individuals and depend on them to do the right thing.
I think so, and it is a philosophical issue. My personal view is that government's probably too big at the moment, way too big. And I think that what is important for government to do is to empower individuals to be able to get on and do what they need to be doing. Obviously, there are people in society that need help, that don't have the capability to manage, say, their financial affairs, and maybe have long-term unemployment, and certainly are needing to be looked after, as any decent society would do.
Yeah.
But certainly, as is the case with this housing affordability, and there's mooted some policy in the upcoming budget in 9 days about what the government might be doing, I think that there seems to be, in Australia at least, a mentality that the government is going to be available and should be willing to step in at all costs. And I just think that, A, that's a recipe sometimes for disaster, but B, in the case of housing affordability, government seeking to perhaps make major changes could actually make the problem worse. And so that's a real concern.
Well, you've spoken a lot of wisdom tonight, David. I thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we can have you back on Open House once again in the future.
All the best, Stephen. Good night.
David Gallagher, he's Professor of Economics at the...